comes the sun, little darling. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. It's all right. Here comes the sun.
Hey everybody, welcome. This is Tuesday at 4 o'clock, so you're on KPFK 90.7 FM. This is Eric Mann. I'm the host of the show you're listening to called Voices from the Frontlines. I'm in studio with our producer, Channing Martinez. For the next half an hour, Channing and I are going to be doing reviews of the amazing, astounding, unbelievable, one-of-a-kind film, Moonlight, directed by Barry Jenkins, produced by Terrell McCraney. And we're going to both do our individual interpretations of a film that could have hundreds and hundreds of wonderful interpretations. The film, I'm just going to read you the credits. It's Moonlight. I hope most of you, many of you have seen it. If not, go and see it right away. It's a film about the coming of age of a black, young, queer man becoming a teenager, becoming an adult. It's a rite of passage film. It's almost indescribable. It's directed by Barry Jenkins, produced by Terrell McCraney, who also wrote the book. The characters, the film is essentially constructed in three pieces. Sharon as the little kid, and his first incarnation, he's called Little. In Teenager Sharon, in the second, played by Ashton Sanders, in the first by Alex R. Hibbert. In the third, his name is Black, the same person, of course, played by Tremonti Rhodes. His mother in all three incarnations is the incredible Naomi Harris. Almost that should become her name, incredible Naomi Harris. Sharon's best friend, Kevin, is played in three different characters. First by Jaden Piner, as a teenager by Jarrell Jerome. Adult is Andre Holland. There's a very wonderful opening, powerful actor playing a drug dealer named Juan. Mahershala Ali is the actor. And finally, the drug dealer's girlfriend, Teresa by Janelle Monáe. All of them amazing. I'm going to turn it over to our producer, Channing Martinez, to give his interpretation of Moonlight.
Cool. So I saw the film and I loved it, of course. And I wrote a review because I'm better in the written word. So Moonlight is one of the few films created that forces viewers to look directly into the eyes of a black queer man in pain, experiencing the full breadth of the oppressive, repressive, racist, and homophobic society that is the United States. Barry Jenkins, director of Moonlight, shows us four pivotal points in Sharon's life. His childhood as a black young man who doesn't yet realize his sexuality, that is, on the contrary, apparent to his peers. Second is Sharon's teenage years that ends in his incarceration. Third is his adult life after prison as the new head of the local drug trade. And last, well, you'd have to go see the film to find out. In the same tradition of Tongues Untied and Invisible Man, Moonlight highlights the complex character of a black man while at the same time highlighting his invisibility in his own community. Sharon is gay, black, and a boy growing up in a neighborhood dominated by the local drug trade. Juan is Sharon's only father figure but is also the head of the local drug trade that sells drugs to Sharon's mother. Kevin is Sharon's only friend, but also realizes that he, as a teenager, he doesn't want to be labeled a faggot, and in fact is forced by a bully to initiate a fight with his best friend that ends with Sharon's incarceration for fighting back. In each case, it's hard to choose one aspect of their identity to side with versus the other. Many white people in real life are comfortable with black men who know their place, But the moment we show a form of dissent or step out of line in their view, their white uncomfort turns into our incarceration, repression, and in many cases, death. Tongues Untied, created in 1989, also a great film, highlights the struggles of black queer men. Marlon Riggs raises the question of the role of silence in the black gay community, as well as the white LGBT community, with poems from several writers, including most notably Essex Hemphill. The story of silence is told. Silence has been used in the black queer community for years as a weapon in the face of homophobia inside and outside of the black community. It has been only through silence, Riggs argues, that has helped to keep the sanity of many black gay men in the face of racism inside and outside of the white LGBT community. Most importantly, Riggs raises the statement, brothers loving brothers is a revolutionary call to action with a responsibility, with a repeated statement, brother to brother, brother to brother, brother to brother. The ingenious nature of Moonlight is that it finds a way to speak to the character of the master, the house slave, the field slave, and even the abolitionist, all at the same time. In a time when black people are shouting in the streets, I can't breathe, and are being killed by police for, quote, quote, living while black, Moonlight attempts to, in my opinion, force Americans to look at life through the eyes of a black queer man, just like the actual lived experience of many black people in the United States. The only face of the government included in the film is the police. Although Paula, Sharon's mother, is grateful that Juan found Sharon when he was lost and took care of him for a night, she was very quick to immediately attempt to break any connection Juan and Sharon made as soon as he returned home. It's very clear that Sharon and his community has in fact been purposely forced into poverty. Boarded up apartments, buildings, houses, and businesses are no stranger to this film. When Barry Jenkins leaves out all of the other faces of society, it is an accurate picture through the eyes of a young black man. Although not widely recognized, the lived experience of a black young man is very different from the lived experience of a black young woman. The lived experience of a black young man is very different from the lived experience of a black gay young man. Jenkins only shows us the moments that matter the most to Sharon, the moments when he is attempting to decipher his identity.
That was the voice of Channing Martinez. This is the voice of Eric Mann. We're still on Fun Drive, 818-985-5735. I've always been wondering, I thought that was very beautiful, Channing. I've always been wondering what if we just did a Fun Drive where we said, this is Fun Drive, 818-985-5735, and then continue the show. And we didn't do anything except every once in a while say, this is Fun Drive, 818-985-5735. We want to use the last 20 minutes we have or a little less to read my review and for you to hear it. But we need you to, because this entire hour is a Fun Drive hour. There's going to be a second half an hour programming more directly around the Fun Drive, but it would be nice to raise some money now. 818-985-5735. This is my review of Moonlight, and neither of us have heard each other's reviews until we got here. Moonlight is a beautiful, exquisite film about black life, the black community, the black nation, and within it, the struggle for manhood, personhood of a gay, queer, black man coming of age, coming of many ages. It's one of the most important films I've ever seen. Every scene is shot in such realism. The music score is gripping. I want to see it over and over again and urge you to do the same. The film ostensibly is in some way simple, straightforward, and yet it's so nuanced, so complex, it's hard to describe, let alone analyze. But let me start out of context and plot with a few efforts at observation, namely what I observed and tried to comprehend. Moonlight is set in Miami, Florida, where the author Barry Jenkins grew up. The entire film is set inside the black ghetto of Miami. Now I'm going to read A.O. Scott, the reviewer for the New York Times. He writes, "To describe Moonlight, Barry Jenkins' second feature, as a movie about growing up poor, black, and gay would be accurate enough. It would also not be wrong to call it a movie about drug abuse, mass incarceration, and school violence. But those classifications are also inadequate, so much as to say downright misleading. It would be truer to the mood and spirit of this breathtaking film to say it's also about teaching a child to swim by cooking a meal for an old friend, about the feeling of sand on skin and the sound of waves on a darkened beach, about first kisses and lingering regrets. Based on the play, In Moonlight, Black Boys Look Blue by Terrell Alvin McCraney, Moonlight is both disarmingly, at times almost bearably, a personal film, an urgent social document, a hard look at American reality, and a poem written in light, music, and vivid faces." Now, as I'm going to explain, I totally disagree because I think that A.O. Scott is trying to take a black film about black people and black queer men, and by making it universal, he's essentially making it nothing, and he missed the whole point of the film. Now, there is a very powerful scene in the film where young Sharon, who has been befriended by Ali, who is the drug dealer, a very charming drug dealer and his very charming girlfriend, finally says, "My mama does drug," he asked Mon at the dinner table, "and you sell drugs?" And then A.O. Scott says, watching him complete the syllogism in his head and watching Juan's reaction is heartbreaking. That is true. But how about why crack cocaine rose in 1984 to 1990 and beyond, after the system's assassination of Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, the Black Panther Party, and the revolutionary hope for the black community and the black nation? Or how about in a massive public health epidemic, the system carried out a truly genocidal war on drugs, war on crime, war on gangs? Did you know, readers and listeners, in 1980, there were 143 black men in jail or prison and 463,000 enrolled in colleges. But by 2000, there were 791,000 black men in jail or prison and 600,000 enrolled in colleges or universities. This has nothing to do with drugs and everything to do with anti-black genocide. Today in Los Angeles, 55% of all MTA passengers arrested by MTA police and sheriffs for the non-existent crime of fare evasion are black. Yes, many black, gay, queer boys, youth, men are among them. But how is it possible to separate the prisoners from the police state and talk about teaching a child to swim, about cooking a meal for an old friend, about the feelings of sand on skin and the sound of waves on a darkened beach, about first kisses and lingering regrets, without repeating this is a film about a black, gay, queer child, teenager, and a man coming of age inside the concentration camps of U.S. imperialism? Mm-hmm. And when I watched the film, I felt that, you know, they talk about shooting fish in a barrel, and I felt that the black people, who were the only characters you saw, were not, of course, free. They were not simply walking down the street. They were walking down the street under the U.S. police state. It's not the obligation of the filmmaker to tell you that, although what I'm going to get to, he does. But for those of us who are politically conscious, we have to see a film through the larger frame of the dictatorship under which black people are living. Imagine a film in which a group of Jews in Nazi Germany, emaciated, despondent, terrified, happy, elated, heterosexual, homosexual, were coming of age. For a film reviewer to say one of the great things about the film is the absence of Nazi characters is such an outrage. You don't need Nazis on the screen to understand the Jews are rats in a racist cage, and every sip from a cup or breath of air or a stolen kiss is defined by genocide, the struggle against it, and the Nazi capitalist imperialist state. This is not the responsibility of the filmmakers to make that statement, although I believe they do, and do so brilliantly, but it's our responsibility as anti-fascist viewers to understand what we're seeing. In the film, all the characters are black, as they would be in the segregated Bantustans of Miami's Liberty City, an ironic name, and that in itself is beautiful. But the police state is always right around the corner, right out of the corner of your eye. In one scene, teenager Sharon, bullied and beaten in a scene where his first lover, Kevin, played by Gerald Jerome, is forced to beat him up in public by the gang leader, Terrell, played by Patrick DeCeo. It's like the slave being forced to beat another slave, which does not mean that Kevin could not have refused. But in that rite of passage, a young queer boy has to deny being queer by beating up his queer lover in public. This reminds me of a scene in Amiri Baraka's play The Toilet, first produced in St. Mark's Playhouse in 1964. Inside the toilet, a gang beats up, in this case, a white queer boy who professes his love for a black man. The black man, of course, must deny it. And only in the end of the film, after the play, after they've beaten the living hell out of the white kid, does the black man have to go back into the toilet and hug his lover and say he's sorry. Then in a powerful scene, Sharon, bloodied and beaten, returns to the classroom. Quietly, with no warning or announcement, he picks up a chair and breaks it over Terrell's head in retaliation. And there in the Arclight Theater, with a predominantly white audience, the audience broke out into cheers. But I was immediately overcome by fear, if not terror, at what would happen to Sharon. And sure enough, true to reality, the police are called in, and Sharon is on his way to his first prison sentence. A similar fight in a white middle-class high school would be seen as boys would be boys. And if the white kid got suspended or a suspended sentence, funny how the system suspends judgment for white folks, that would be a lot. But for black youth, there are no boys that will be boys. There are no gay boys that will be boys. There is no fighting back. There is no possibility of expression. Virtually every expression is going to end up being imprisoned. Later in the film, the now grown little Sharon has become black. Black, as he always has, powerfully played by Trevante Rhodes. And he has a moving connection with his mom, the brilliant Naomi Harris, who the film shows moving from a vital, protective mom who is working, and yes, already doing some drugs, but now having to leave her son alone as a latchkey child, to a completely devastated crack cocaine addict and is now in rehabilitation home, where she's been able to break her addiction, as she said, do some good for the others in the program. But for me, the second track of the film not shown is Bill and Hillary Clinton cynically getting elected in 1992 and 1996. At a meeting organized by Reverend Jesse Jackson in 1992, the rap artist and politically activist Sister Soldier was asked by a reporter if black people during the LA rebellions who were perpetuating that violence, did they think that was wise? Was that a wise, recent action? Soldier said, yeah, it was wise. I mean, if black people kill black people every day, why not have a week and kill white people? White people, this government and the mayor were well aware of the fact that black people were dying every day in Los Angeles under gang violence. So if you're a gang member and you would normally be killing somebody, why not kill a white person? Do you think that somebody thinks that white people are better above and beyond dying when they would kill their own kind? Now, speaking to Jesse Jackson's Senior Rainbow Coalition in 1992, Bill Clinton responded both to that quotation and something Soldier had said in the music video. He said, this is Bill Clinton, if you took the words white and black, if you reversed them, you might think David Duke, the Ku Klux Klan, was speaking, said Clinton. Clinton's response was harshly criticized by Jackson, who said, Sister Soldier represents the feelings and hopes of a whole generation of people. The point was, Bill and Hillary Clinton ran against black militancy in 1992 to get elected. Then the Clintons got elected and reelected with a conscious plan based on the Democratic Leadership Conference to move the Democratic Party to the right. There, Hillary Clinton, talking about the crack cocaine epidemic, a public health crisis of imperialism, used the crisis that she and her husband caused to justify three strikes, the war on black and Latino youth as super predators. How dare she say it was a bad use of words today in 2016? Unless the Clintons choose to go to prison for the rest of their lives, there's no way they can atone for their sins. And even then, there's no way they can get so many black lives back from the jails and the graves. Stop saying mass incarceration. Stop saying genocide and concentration camps. This was part of the film that I was watching when the woman was on crack, to understand the Clintons were the white evil forces, not on the screen, but in my consciousness, and hopefully in yours. The film Moonlight is so brilliantly and deeply moving. Its portrayal of women, both Teresa, the girlfriend of the drug dealer, played by Janelle Monáe, and the drug dealer Juan, played by Mahershala Ali, and again Sharon's mom in three different phases of her life, played by Naomi Harris, were very well-drawn characters. I want to make sure I comment on the beautiful choice to cast Sharon as very black and dark-skinned from the original book in Moonlight, Black Boys Look Blue by Terrell Alvin McCraley. In Africa, I saw black and blacker Africans joking with each other about how much melanin they had and how, yes, they were so black they looked blue. And they were proud of that. In the Civil Rights Movement and the Black Power Movement, I saw black people say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud, and to valorize the darkest skins blacks, as well as love every black person regardless of their shade and hue. But yes, it is a sign of our reactionary times that the system tries to put forth lighter-skinned black people as the model of beauty, as opposed to one of the many models of black beauty. And even young black children are being told that they're mixed, if only to mix them up. In that context, to see the deep, dark, black beauty of little Sharon in black is in itself a wonder and a revolutionary sight for sore eyes. Now, the Strategy Center has just opened up a new movement center, Strategy and Soul, on the corner of King and Crenshaw. We had our revolutionary grand opening on October 8th. We have a state-of-the-art new film theater that can show films like Moonlight in digital cinema initiative and surround sound format. I'd love to watch that film and films like it. Go next door to Strategy and Soul Bookstore, find either online or among the books, or for that matter, other films, ways of providing even broader historical frames for magnificent films like Moonlight. No film needs to tell the whole story. But in my view, through the right eyes and the right politics, Moonlight does tell the whole story of black life, with a wonderful focus on the coming of age of a black, gay, queer boy, man, child, and man. Please go see it, as I will be seeing it again and again. This is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Frontlines. You've heard my review and that of Channing Martinez of the wonderful, amazing, stupendous, terrific, fantastic film, Moonlight. We got 4 minutes. 818-985-5735. I'm so thrilled we got this radio show. We always tell you how lucky you are to have KPFK, but I want to tell you we are lucky to have KPFK because without KPFK, we wouldn't have had any audience to write these reviews. Yeah. We wouldn't have had the motivation. Channing, in the last couple of minutes, 818-985-5735. What are you thinking?
That was a wonderful review. I liked that you actually pulled in a lot of things. Sometimes you say things with the thought that you already have a knowledge outside to understand what's in the film. And I like that your review actually pulls them back into the film and realize that this is what he's talking about. Did you understand? Did you catch that or did that go by your ear, right? And so especially with the Clintons and a lot of black people supporting Clintons, please don't vote for Clinton because they're the worst people in the world. Let's just be serious, right? Let's talk about the crime bill, right? Let's talk about the war on drugs. Let's talk about super predators, et cetera, right? And I think the film is in itself a great piece uplifting a lot of black young queer men.
What was the most, in terms of your own direct, you and the film looking eye to eye, what was the central thing inside your soul that the film touched?
That's a big question. The central question is the visibility of the black queer experience, which is not documented in public very often, I think, is the biggest thing for me.
And that was the biggest thing in your wonderful review. Is and in your wonderful life. You're on KPFK, 818-985-5735. We're so lucky to have KPFK. We're so lucky to have Voices from the Front Lines. We're so lucky to have the Strategy Center. Could you call? We're going to go off the air in about 2 minutes. Look, I don't know why you don't send me more emails, because I could read them and you could be, you know, I'd like to read some of your reviews. Next week we could get a few clips from your reviews of Moonlight or your views of Channing and my reviews of Moonlight. You can send it to Eric at voicesfromthefrontlines.com. You can send it to Channing at thestrategycenter.org. We'd love to hear from you. And we're going to take a break. And we want to thank you for listening to our reviews. And we want to certainly thank the amazing Barry Jenkins and Tara McCraney. We just can't thank you enough for the amazing film Moonlight.
The final curtain, Friends, I'll say it clear and state my case of which I'm.